This is Larry Henry, author of the Mafia Chronicles, and you're listening to Gangland Wire.
You are listening to Gangland Wire, hosted by former Kansas City Police Intelligence Unit Detective Gary Jenkins.
Welcome, all you wiretappers. It's good to have you here in the Gangland Wire studio. Tonight, we're going to talk about Louis Lefty Buchalter. He was a longtime New York City racketeer in the 20s and 30s. Supposedly, he was the kind of the street boss, shall we say, of Albert Anastasia's Murder Incorporated, the enforcement arm of the mob back in those days. He was the only mob member that I know of, for sure, that was electrocuted, that was executed by the government. He was put to death in the electric chair at Sing Sing Prison on March the 4th, 1944. Along with him, there were two underlings, Emmanuel Mendy Vies and Louis Capone. No connection that I know of to Al Capone. All of them were sentenced to death following their 1941 New York State conviction for the 1936 murder of Joseph Rosen. Now, Mr. Rosen was a former trucking contractor who had been forced out of business by Buchalter and his men. At the time of his murder, Joseph Rosen was a proprietor of a candy store at 725 Sutter Avenue in Brooklyn. Supposedly, he had been threatening and putting it out on the street he was going to assist the new New York City special prosecutor. Thomas Dewey was making a big splash publicly by looking at the rackets in the trucking industry, the infiltration of the unions, the extortion of the trucking owners and contractors. Joseph Rosen had once been in the trucking business and been forced out by Buchalter, and now he had this candy store, kind of put him in a vulnerable position, being operating a store on the street in Brooklyn where you knew where he was going to be every day. Now, Lefty Buchalter was believed to have ordered as many as 80 murders in his career. He always insisted that this one he was completely innocent in. Vies and Capone always claimed they had been framed also. But after being convicted in state court and several appeals to the appellate court were unsuccessful, even though some of the reviewing judges noticed there was some weakness in the state's case, the execution was upheld. The most recent postponement occurred within an hour and a half of their scheduled appointment with old Sparky, as they used to call him. Finally, 9:35 Thursday, March the 2nd, now here's some poetic justice, Governor Thomas E. Dewey ordered a 48-hour stay in response to the last-ditch effort by Buchalter in an appeal to federal courts. You know, today that became common where you could go from state court and a state conviction and then appeal over to federal courts. The Supreme Court has made that a lot harder today. It still can be done, but it's pretty hard to do. And it's kind of Buchalter's attorney had kind of a novel appeal. He argued that Buchalter was in federal prison for a narcotics violation, and he had a 14-year sentence to do, but then he had this appointment with the executioner. So their argument was that the United States Attorney General, it was a man named Francis Biddle, had improperly released Buchalter from his federal case so that they could put him in state prison and execute him. They wanted him to go ahead and serve out his full 14-year sentence, I guess, in federal court. Anyhow, at the very last minute, Thomas Dewey did telephone the Sing Sing warden, and he called Father Bernard Martin, who was the prison chaplain who took word to the three death house prisoners. This was the sixth time their date of execution had been moved, and it was the closest they'd come to the electric chair so far, within an hour and a half. It's reported that they showed no visible emotion. Probably would be pretty much emotioned out by then to get within an hour and a half of your appointment with the electric chair. They'd even already said their goodbyes to all their family members. There's a pre-execution space that inmates had nicknamed the dance hall. They'd already been clothed in their death suits, which was a pair of black pants and a white shirt. They'd shaved spots on their head to allow a clean connection for the electrodes to go into their head. I thought they shaved their whole heads, but I guess they just shaved out spots for the electrodes. They'd already eaten their last meals. The lunch was steak, french fried potatoes, and a lettuce and tomato salad with some rolls, pie, and coffee. And then dinner was roast chicken, mashed potatoes, lettuce and tomato salad again, rolls and coffee again. Probably would like to have had a drink with that, but I guess they don't allow you having a drink. You always see that in the movies, but I don't think they really do. Some newspapers reported that Dewey was agreeing to order a stay because Buchalter had said he would cooperate, but that didn't happen. That ain't happening. So that's March the 2nd. March the 4th, federal and district appeals courts are unwilling to involve themselves in this case. Finally, the last possible chance for appeal and another look at the case and some time away from their date with destiny. Saturday, March the 4th, 1 o'clock in the afternoon, the U.S. Supreme Court rejected without comment any appeal from these three prisoners. Once again, they had to go through their pre-death house execution preparations. They went back to the same dance hall to say the same goodbyes. That would be a booger. Buchalter spent the day with his wife, Beatrice, also known as Betty, and he had a son named Harold. Beatrice supposedly urged her husband, the killer Lepke Buchalter, to save himself by sending out to the U.S. attorney a message and saying he'd cooperate. He said, no, the best I could do is get another delay of 6 or 8 months or maybe a year. The way it's going, I'd rather go tonight. I understand that. Enough is enough unless I could get it commuted to a life sentence. And then they didn't really have the witness protection program. They didn't have safe prisons they could send you to. There'd be, you know, he's going to turn on Anastasia and the other people in Murder Incorporated, the New York bomb bosses in 1944. Ain't no way, no place he could hide in the prison system. And apparently they weren't willing to let him go. It's kind of hard to let go of the fox or the coyote or the wolf when the sheep are still out there. The prisoners repeated their same last meals that they had on March the 2nd. Some things were different on March the 4th, however. Family members were permitted to stay about a half an hour past the usual parting time of 9 o'clock. You're going to be executed at midnight. Then family has to leave by 9. Supposedly, Buchalter was allowed to wear a pair of gray pants instead of the black, and there was no telephone call from the governor that night. Beatrice Buchalter met with reporters after she left the prison that night, and she read a statement from Lepke. His statement is this, quote, "I insist that I am not guilty of the Rosen murder, that the witnesses against me lied, and that I did not receive a fair trial. 4 out of 7 judges in the Court of Appeals said that Vise, Capone, and I were not guilty. Judge Rippey said that we were not given even a remote outside chance of any fair consideration of our defense by the jury, and that the evidence wasn't strong enough to even submit this case to a jury. The one and only thing that I've asked for is to have a commission appointed to examine the facts in the Rosen case. If that examination does not show I'm not guilty, I'm willing to go to the chair regardless of what information I have given or can give." At 11 o'clock that evening, Louis Capone, 47 years old, followed Father Bernard Martin into the death chamber. 24 witnesses observed. Newspapers later reported that Capone was selected to go to his death first because he was the weakest emotionally and physically. He had recently had heart problems, so I guess they wanted to make sure the state killed him before he died of a heart attack. He said nothing when he was strapped into the chair. Electrodes were attached to his body. They said his lips could be seen as moving in a silent prayer, "Our Father who art in heaven," I'm sure, over and over again. And then they slap a helmet with a large electrode inside of it, which corresponds with the safe shave patches on his head, and they put a face-concealing mask over his face and put all that on his head. The executioner was a man named Joseph Francel. He sat at the chair controls. At 2 minutes after 11, he hit the first brain-killing shock. He followed it with several more jolts of current. This burned the life out of Louis Capone. 3 minutes later, a guard pulled open Capone's shirt. Dr. Charles Sweet checked for life signs. "This man is dead," Sweet announced. Guards came, removed Capone's remains, placed him on a cart, and wheeled him next door to the autopsy room. A minute later, after Capone left, he was standing there waiting. Emmanuel Wiese, 37 years old, walked quickly into the death chamber with Rabbi Jacob Katz by his side. Wiese indicated to one of the guards, at Thomas Keeley, that he wished to make a statement. Wiese looked at the gallery and said, "I'm here on a framed case. I'm innocent, and God and Governor Dewey know it. I want to thank Judge Lehman," who was the appeals court judge that thought they were probably not guilty. He also said, "Give my love to my family and everyone, and I'm innocent," were his last words. Wiese's turn in the chair began about 7 minutes after 11. 4 minutes later, his lifeless remains were removed. Louis Lepke Buchalter is next up. Rabbi Katz steps from the death chamber to join Buchalter and escort him in. At 47 years old, Lepke walks in confidently and silently. Journalists struggled to find some sign of emotion in the racketeer's movements or expressions. They saw nothing. One reporter claimed he saw a lip quiver. Another noticed some redness and perspiration on Buchalter's face. Another wire service reporter suggested that the prisoner was so dazed that his attitude could have been interpreted as indifference. They found a guard. Later on, reporters found a guard that made this comment. The other two were frightened, but Lepke was paralyzed. New York Daily News reported that Buchalter was not only calm but cooperative. He placed his own arms in a position to be fastened to the chair. He leaned his head forward into the death-delivering helmet. Executioner Francel delivered the first shock into Buchalter at 13 minutes past 11, so it took 13 minutes to execute three men. The fourth shock was completed 3 minutes later, and Louis Lepke Buchalter was dead. They were able to obtain the bodies, and Buchalter's family assembled for a brief service at the Park West Memorial Chapel in Manhattan, Sunday, March the 5th. That's at 115 West 79th Street. If you guys are in Manhattan, you want to go by and take a look at it. The Rabbi Morris Goldberg chanted some prayers. Buchalter's remains were in a plain oaken casket. He's buried at Mount Hebron Cemetery in Flushing, Queens, next to his mother. They had a ceremony for Emmanuel Wiese at the Midtown Funeral Home, 171 West 85th Street, and about exactly the same time as Buchalter's service. Rabbi Aaron Liss led those services. Wiese's widow, Sophia, his mother and four brothers attended. Wiese was also buried at Mount Hebron Cemetery, and just really close to the Buchalter gravesite. On Thursday, March the 9th, a couple days later, Jewish people have to be buried within 24 hours, I believe, of their death. Catholics, not so much. On March the 9th, the remains of Louis Capone was placed in an inexpensive metal casket from Andrew Torregrossa's funeral home at 1305 79th Street in Brooklyn, taken to the Church of Our Lady of Solace on Mermaid Avenue in Coney Island. His neighbor In this neighborhood, he had been a longtime resident, and he drew a pretty large crowd, a much larger crowd than was seen at Buchalter in the Wiese services. After Mass was celebrated by Father Francis Forlick, a procession of 40 cars and mourners and 5 cars of flowers wound through the Brooklyn streets to Holy Cross Cemetery in Flatbush. His wife Sophie was there, 3 children, 2 brothers, and he was placed in the cemetery's St. Charles section. So this ends the story of 3 members of Murder Incorporated executed for their many crimes, but maybe not executed for the actual crime they did. You never know. As we used to say, when you get somebody and they'd keep saying that they didn't do it and they didn't do it, but there's enough evidence to get them charged, you'd say, well, maybe they didn't do it, but they did something. Send them on down. And this is kind of the logical end of that kind of thinking. I'm not real proud of that kind of thinking back in the day when I was young, but But that's kind of how you get to thinking when you're on one side of seeing the victims all the time and then finally get somebody that you know is doing the deeds. You hope you try to get them right, and you hope to get it right, but you don't always get it right. And maybe they didn't get it right. But like I said, you know these guys did something. They did a lot, more than likely. Louis Lepke Buchalter, Emmanuel Mendy Thies, and Louis Capone. The only three men that were members of organized crime that were sentenced to death, and the death sentence was carried out, I believe. If you have a friend or relative with a problem with drugs or alcohol, make your first call to First Call. Call 816-361-5900 or go to their website, www.firstcallkc.org. Thanks for listening. Support the podcast, please. Go to your Venmo app. Get your Venmo app, V-E-N-M-O. Buy me a shot and a beer like Mark Ryan did. Buy me a cup of coffee like Alan Turner did. I appreciate it. Or buy my movie. Go to my website, www.ganglandwire.com, and get the DVD with the special features on it, or make a donation, and then I'll send you a copy of the DVD. Don't feel like you can afford that? Go rent it for $1.99. I just want you to see my movie I did. I think it's interesting. It tells the story of the Kansas City Police Intelligence Unit and the FBI and how we started the case that ended up uncovering all the skim from Las Vegas by the Chicago, Cleveland, Milwaukee, and Kansas City crime families. Get my Kansas City Mob Tour app at the Apple Store. Buy my book, Leaving Vegas, How FBI Wiretaps Ended Mob Domination of Las Vegas Casino. In my book, I go deeply into the story of how we developed this investigation. I was able to obtain all the wiretaps and hidden microphone audio bits and transcripts. So if you get the Kindle version, all the transcripts that I used in the book are linked to the actual audio at a Vimeo site. So thanks for listening, folks, and keep on coming back. Good night, folks.
Music provided by our good friend and superfan from Portland, Oregon, Casey McBride. Thanks, Casey.